The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and for all of you who've been watching all over the world, the presentation on autism made in the USA, we welcome you. This is a special webinar. We will be talking now in a few moments with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Eisenstadt. I'm in our studio in New York City, and we're streaming this live. You can watch this by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. This is where we do our broadcast every day. And I'm going to be asking our engineers and our webmaster to give a number for people who wish to call in and share their comments and their questions for myself and the other panelists that will be joining us. Excuse me, I understand that there were a couple of glitches tonight where there was the internet was simply overwhelmed with people coming on far beyond what our expectations were, and there were two crashes. I apologize for that. No way we could have known in advance, because a lot of people were supposed to sign up, did not. And as a result, it went down. In fact, what I'm going to do is, any of the people who would like to get a copy of the film, just give my office a call tomorrow. And as a gift, I will send you the DVD of the film so you can give it to a friend, or you can watch it again in the comfort and privacy of your own home. So that's my gift to you. Now we're going to be speaking in a few moments, as soon as Dr. Sherry Tenpenny comes up and Dr. Eisenstadt, and we'll get their views on this. In the interim, I have something I want to share with you. And until they come on, I'm going to be doing something that you have not heard before. This I was going to do earlier today on my 3 o'clock show. This is the work of Dr. Roberts, and it's about revisiting the truth behind the vaccine thimerosal aluminum autism spectrum disorder cover-up. This is the first time this has been shared. Now, in the film, there was a 22-minute segment, and that 22-minute segment specifically showed that the government knew in advance that the vaccines contained ingredients that were leading to neurological disorders, mitochondrial disorders, and that these could manifest on any part of the autism spectrum. Remember, autism is like a curve. At the very end, you could have Asperger syndrome, you could be in complete withdrawal, but maybe ADD and ADHD, maybe minimal brain function, maybe some cognitive behavior, some communication skills, but not full. We have seen it all. But what we know now is what I've determined over 8 years of in-depth, full-time research, leading to a series of articles, a book, and two award-winning documentaries, Vaccine Nation and Autism, the latest one. And that is, virtually every single parent that I've spoken with will tell you their children were developing normally, meeting all of those signs, walking, speaking, movement, eye contact, interest, laughing, playing, until a series of vaccines. And then it starts. Frequently, the doctors in denial, saying it's normal for having inconsolable crying or other symptoms. But the parents know something's wrong. What the parents did not know, what the media has refused to acknowledge, what our legislative process has refused to investigate, and what all of American medicine is guilty of, is complicity in this crime against humanity. And that's what I call it. We have the science to prove vaccines are neither safe nor effective. There is not a single person in the world who could guarantee you that you would be protected from a disease and guaranteed that you will not be injured from the vaccine. So they make broad-based statements that all vaccines are safe and effective. And when you ask them, please show us the science. Show us the studies, the randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, the long-term studies. Show us where you've taken 1,000 children age 2 that have received no vaccines and compare them with 1,000 children who receive your vaccines, and then follow those children vaccinated and non-vaccinated for 6 years, and then tell us which conditions they developed. What was the frequency? What was the statistical significance that would allow you to say that there is proof of efficacy and safety, or there is no proof of efficacy and safety? They have no such studies. No such studies exist. And I have examined very carefully and meticulously every study that has purported to show safety and efficacy of vaccines. As a scientist, as a professor, as a person who is also a journalist, I'm embarrassed by the lack of scientific integrity in any given study I've seen. And yet the American media seems to feel that vaccination is a sacred cow. They will not approach it. So every time you discuss vaccine, it starts with the idea that, what are you, stupid? Of course vaccines are safe and effective. If they weren't, do you think the U.S. Public Health Service, the CDC, the FDA, the National Academy of Sciences, do you think that the American Academy of Pediatrics, do you think 1 million doctors would allow the public to be used as human guinea pigs? Of course not. Therefore, you are maligned for raising even the question. So every doctor, every scientist, every activist, every parent that has ventured an opinion backed up by fact or personal experience is considered anecdotal and irrelevant. And that's where we are today. So in my world, we now see that we cannot trust either the community of science, nor the community of physicians, nor the integrity of our public health agencies to be honest with us about this. That's unfortunate. Instead, we have apologists and propagandists disguised as science and public health. It is neither. I will hold now my thoughts on the important paper. Instead, I will first go to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Eisenstadt, who are standing by to give their thoughts and opinions on this important topic, and then I will give the people in the audience a number that you will be able to call in, and you can, anywhere in the world, or anywhere that you can call, North America, you can give your opinions, thoughts about the film you've just seen, or about questions or issues, or input you have on the subject itself. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let us now first go to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Nice to have you with us today.
Good evening, Gary, and thank you very much for having me.
I'm going to ask you a few questions, and then we would like for you to give us your insights and opinion as a board-certified physician and someone who has also taken upon themselves to become educated on the subject of vaccine safety and efficacy. Here are my questions. As a clinician, as a person who is also involved in public health science, what proof have you been able to find that a given vaccine or combination of vaccines containing thimerosal, aluminum, either or both, and also formaldehyde and monosodium glutamate are safe and effective for any given child? Either you have found the proof that they exist to support public health policies for mandating vaccines, or you have not found the proof, in which case offers what you have found in its place it should challenge it. The form is yours.
Well, that's a really excellent question, and because there really isn't any proof. I mean, looking at vaccination in terms of what is the definition of safe and what is the definition of effective. So let me give you an example. If they were bringing a new hepatitis B vaccine to market, as an example, they would use as a placebo a second vaccine, perhaps the meningitis C vaccine, perhaps a tetanus shot, perhaps a flu shot, perhaps a different hepatitis B vaccine. And they would say that the placebo was another substance with a known safety profile. So what they're actually doing is comparing the side effects of a new vaccine to the side effects of an existing vaccine. And if both of those vaccines are both of those side effects are about the same, then they say that the new vaccine is acceptable in terms of side effects and it is safe and effective for the public. So there really is no comparison to a shot of sterile water, a placebo, a sugar pill, something like that, in terms of a safety study. They follow the following it for safety, they follow for a short period of time, and it's usually just a subjective scoring that's generally given to the parents. And in terms of effective, the definition of effective of what the general population and what physicians define as effective is that it means that if I give you a shot, it will keep you from getting sick. But that's really not the research standard that is used as the definition of effective for the vaccine industry. What the vaccine industry really means when they say that a vaccine has been effective is that I've injected you with something and your body created an antibody. And once that happens, they say the vaccine is effective. And we know from a lot of scientific research that the presence of an antibody doesn't necessarily keep you from getting sick. And that the antibody is frequently representative of a chronic infection and that things have not been completely cleared and eliminated from the body. So those two definitions alone say that vaccines are not safe, have not been proven to be safe, and have not been proven to be protective, because the definition of effective means that you create an antibody.
I appreciate those insights. Now for the next issue. What proof do we have in all of immunology that enhancing or stimulating antibody is automatically protective against a given pathogen?
We don't. We know that the antibody is there as a present because we know that people can have high levels of antibody and still become sick. The classic case of that is we're using tetanus, that the CDC reports in every 2 years they do a report that shows the number of cases of tetanus that have been occurring in the United States over the preceding 2 years. On average, there's about 124 or so, say roughly 150 cases of tetanus. And when you drill down into that data, what they will show is that patients can have four or more tetanus shots with a known quantifiable amount of what is called protective antibody and still get full-blown tetanus. So the antibody is there as a suppressor. It is there to suppress the release of toxicities from the cells on an immunological basis. And in many cases, it's my opinion that it's representative that the body has been invaded and has tried to create an antibody to clear it out. And because that pathogen got introduced into the body by an abnormal mechanism, i.e. through the skin, the normal processing of both the Th1 and the Th2 pathways did not occur, and that pathogen was not adequately cleared from the blood, and we've got this residual sort of antibody thing running around that looks like a chronic infection.
In that context, when I have read the thousands of articles that exist on different aspects of immunology, I have yet to see where they can justify giving a fully developed immune system of, let's say, a 1 hour or 2 hour baby, a hepatitis B vaccine. Within a year, they're giving them more vaccines, and still that immune system is not fully developed for several years. How could they then claim that they are protecting a child's immune system by building antibodies when the child has not yet built the immune system?
You know, that's the classic explanation, Gary, and it really comes down to a couple of things. Number one, health absolutely cannot come through a needle, and particularly when that needle contains a solution of pathogens and chemicals and known toxicities such as heavy metals and carcinogenic chemicals such as formaldehyde and things like large doses of gelatin. So health cannot come through a needle. And I really like this example where if you look at what happens when a baby comes down the birth canal and is suddenly gone from being totally dependent on the mother's circulation and oxygen and food and everything, that suddenly it comes out, it's into the world, it's disconnected from the mother, and it's like all of these systems have to click on and snap on and start communicating. It's kind of like the when the space shuttle is sitting on the NASA launch pad, and they say liftoff, and all of these buttons and knobs and electricals and everything has to happen in a sequential order and in the exact right way in order for that NASA shuttle to be lifted off of the launch pad. And if something happens, that something in the circuitry is not right, there's warning signs and perhaps things get aborted or disaster happens and the shuttle, spaceship shuttle, blows up. Well, the same thing happens when immediately the baby comes into this world. The cytokine pathways kick in, the hormones kick in, they start using their own lungs and their own oxygen, and their cellular metabolism has to change. And what do but inject it with a vitamin K shot and a hepatitis B shot, and sometimes they've been given antibiotics through the mother as they've been coming through the birth canal. And we goop their eyes with an antibiotic that actually does get absorbed systemically into their system. And how can we possibly think that that is not going to be disruptive to all of those pathways that are trying to initiate the liftoff of that baby as they land on the planet? I think that doctors not understanding that, and doctors not understanding the pathology and the growing physiology of a neonate and the pathological changes that can cause by the injection of those things, I think it should be absolutely criminal.
Is it not the case that virtually all cases of polio in the United States today would be induced by the vaccine?
The oral polio vaccine was stopped being used in this country in 2001 because the only cases that were really happening in the U.S. were being induced by the oral polio live virus vaccine. There was a couple of years transition when it transitioned from oral into injectable, and so those cases that are still happening around the world are being caused by the oral polio vaccine. There's a real complicated mechanism with that. And a lot of people would say something like, oh, well, if we weren't vaccinating, we would have all this imported polio, you know, all these people flying in here from all over the world. Well, the last time that the CDC looked at that, in an 18-year period of time, from, I believe it was from 1980 to 1998, there were 6 cases of imported polio that had happened during that period of time. So it doesn't. It rarely happens. I mean, more kids die per year drowning in bathtubs or getting, hit on a bicycle, than to be worried about so many of these terrible diseases, quote unquote terrible diseases. And infections come and go. They can, you know, your child can get measles or mumps or rubella or chickenpox or pertussis, and the vast, vast, vast majority of those children who are otherwise healthy will recover uneventfully within a couple of days or a couple of weeks. Vaccine injuries can be present for life. And we saw in your video that we saw some really hopeful things of several children that had absolutely recovered from being of the onslaught of vaccines with their autism. But like the one mother said, we will never know what his full potential was because he was damaged. And yes, we got him back. But is it like Humpty Dumpty that they're never, ever back exactly the way they were? You can vaccinate, but you cannot unvaccinate.
When you give a vaccine, such as the polio vaccine, for a long period of time, all the polio vaccine was contaminated by the SV40 virus, the simian virus 40, which later, decades later, was proven to have caused rare cancers in individuals. At the time that the vaccines were given, originally, Dr. Helaman, who was the founder of vaccines as far as the leading vaccine advocate and developer in the United States, he developed the hepatitis vaccine and the influenza vaccine. He said that they found contaminants. In fact, the contaminants were widespread and they couldn't get them out. He panicked after he told Dr. Sabin, his friend and at the same company that made the Sabin vaccine, and their decision was to do nothing, in effect, to cover it up. Dr. Helaman acknowledged this, and I have this in my film, Vaccine Nation. Near the end of his life, he stated to a Canadian professor, in a mea culpa, as if he were telling the truth, he told this story. Why did he wait till the end of his life to tell this story? But he did. In effect, he was saying, on the record, for the first time, all vaccines were contaminated. He did not deal with the issue of efficacy. He dealt with the issue of lack of safety. Now, here is a question. And I'm going to ask this, Dr. Timpenny, please hold your thoughts on this. I'm going to bring in Dr. Meyer Eisenstadt, who has a program here on the Progressive Radio Network every week, because he is both an attorney and a board-certified physician with a background in preventative medicine, as well as in consumer cases involving the government and health fraud. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, Gary, it's a pleasure having you with you. Being with you. Absolute pleasure.
Here is the issue. Here we have the most famous vaccine expert in American history who's developed over 12 vaccines, Dr. Helaman, Maurice Helaman. He says on the record at the end of his life in this interview, and it's in Vaccine Nation, that all the vaccines, all of them, were contaminated. Why didn't the CDC and the FDA and the U.S. Public Health Service and the media try to reach out to see what impact those vaccines contaminants would have had, not just SV40, but other contaminants as well? Because it was also shown that there were rat cells, rat DNA, in these. In fact, back in the 1970s, 1978, a major scientist, the leading scientist in the vaccine program for New York City, met with me in secret at this person's apartment and laid out all these blown up photographs on this the whole floor of this person's apartment. And this person said, "Do you know what you're looking at?" I said, "Yes, these are cultures." This person said, "These are the cultures of the vaccine medium. Every single one is contaminated with rat DNA." And my statement was, "Rat DNA? Well, why don't you just throw out all these vaccines?" The person said, "It is impossible to make a non-contaminated vaccine. It has never been done. It cannot be done. Every single vaccine ever made is contaminated." This is what the person said. And this person said, "I wanted to show you the photos." And I said, "Well, why are you asking me to come here? Why don't you just go public?" This person said, "I do not have the power nor the resources to go up against the vaccine industry and the health authorities they control." This person feared for their life. And so I said, "Well, you realize I can't do anything with this, because the moment I bring this forward, they're going to know exactly who gave it to me, because who else would have the access to this information?" So I said, become a person that comes out of the closet. At that point, we didn't have whistleblowers, nor did we have a whistleblower's law. So indeed, one could only imagine the retaliation from an already dirty industry. And just as an aside, this past year, preparing for a major film that is coming out now, in the next 3 days, it'll be finished, I decided to find out how clean and ethical are the pharmaceutical industries. We brought in two outside attorneys. They work full-time every day for more than 5 months. And all I asked them was one thing. Show me the proof of who's dirty, who's broken the law, who is engaged in illegal and unethical acts and has had to pay fines. I must only deal with people who have been caught and acknowledged their guilt and paid a fine. One day they came up to my office and said, "Here it is." They had three gigantic boxes. They handed me a sheet of paper. I said, "This is every company out there." They said, "That's correct." And I said, "It's over $1 trillion. They said, "That's correct." I said, "Some of these companies, these pharmaceutical companies, have had hundreds of thousands of lawsuits." They said, "That's correct." And they've lost them and they paid fines. The largest being the makers of Vioxx, which paid $5.85 billion to settle having wrongful deaths of 60,000 Americans and over 100,000 injured with heart attack and stroke over a four-year period. And the stock went up, and the president of the company got a bonus. And I said to one of the guys that time, I said, "Only in America could you kill 60,000 people and get a raise." And what it was, I couldn't find a clean company. And I'm thinking, if you commit a crime, for the rest of your life, you will be monikered as a criminal. Pharmaceutical companies break the law, give us deadly and bad drugs, lie about tests and safeties, use off labels illegally, people are injured, and nothing happens. They pay a fine. It's a part of doing business, and their reputations are not sullied. Something's terribly wrong with this scenario. So my question to you is this, with that long preface. Looking at all this today, why is it the American media has not been all over the fact that we've been giving contaminated vaccines? We're not talking about efficacy now, just safety. Contaminated vaccines to virtually every person that's ever gotten a vaccine in the United States.
Let me tell you, that's a good question, you know. But it's no different than the media themselves are no longer real journalists. You're one of the few real journalists around who really don't care about if it's conservative, liberal, progressive. You want the truth. I mean, the media today, the mainstream media, doesn't care about the truth anymore. Just doesn't care about it. I think that's really the bottom line, because if they did the least bit of investigation, if they looked at any of your material, Gary, they would see what's going on. If they read any of Dr. Sherry Tempany's...
Vito's working out the problem.
Okay.
You know, I see, for me, it's been very easy. I've been very blessed, because when I was a third-year medical student, I went to the University of Illinois Medical School. I met Dr. Robert Mendelson. I didn't know who he was at the time, except that I heard that he had left Head Start and was coming to the University of Illinois. And I figured anyone who was such a... He was the national medical director. For anyone who was that prominent position, I was fascinated to meet. And I took his course in pediatrics, and it was a life-changing experience. My wife and I were expecting our first baby. This is back in 1970. And he came to the conclusion, this is 1971 and 1972, all vaccines cause neurological damage. That was way before the autism epidemic. This was way before the millions of cases of ADD, ADHD. It's when asthma wasn't even on the radar compared to what it is today, you know. This was the most brilliant doctor I ever met, you know. And to give you an idea of his background, this is that as he became the godfather to all six of my children, you know, and really influenced my whole medical career, when he was in private practice, before he became the medical director of Head Start, it was during the polio epidemic, and he was sent by the head of his group to find out if they should give polio vaccine or not. This is after exactly what you talked about. They found there was contamination, and the doctors knew it. And he came back and he decided that, and he recommended to his group not to give the polio vaccine. This was the Salk vaccine, which was the original one that was contaminated. And he said two of the doctors left the practice. And a couple weeks later, when they realized that the vaccine was causing problems and they abandoned that whole program, that's when they went to the oral vaccine, which turned out to be no better. You know, he said it became obvious to him that there is such corruption going on. And he said, and that's when he realized that all vaccines cause neurological damage. And that's what it's been a real blessing for my family and for all of my patients over the last almost 40 years, because we were able to bypass the families who came to me. We have now more than 30,000 families that have come to us who decided not to vaccinate their children. They've been able to bypass, in a sense, worrying about being threatened about vaccines. And just to add a little bit to this, Dr. Gary, the work you did last year had incredible impact in bringing the truth to the public. And Dr. Sherry, you also, when it came to bringing the truth about the scam of the swine flu vaccine, you know, and the public rejected it, even though every scientist, every pediatrician, every obstetrician, you know, every public health doctor said, you're going to die if you don't take the vaccine. And 80% of the country said no. How incredible is that? I mean, that's, I think, and we have to build on that momentum, because they're pushing harder. They're going to try to push laws. Obama, who pretends to be a liberal, is going to be the most regressive president ever when he's going to recommend mandatory vaccination for everyone. He's already did it last year. He couldn't make it stick. You know, I wonder what happened. The liberals, when I grew up, meant you had open-minded. You know, you didn't do compulsory type things. It's unbelievable. I mean, the sad part is the politicians have become the hand puppets of the pharmaceutical industry.
If you've just joined us, I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and streaming over the video. You can now go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNull.com if you wish to watch the discussion. And joining me is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and also Dr. Mary Einstadt. And we are talking also in studio. I have two other physicians. We have Dr. Howard Robbins and one of America's leading neurologists, holistic neurologist, Dr. Martin Feldman, graduating magna cum laude of Yale, College of Physicians, Surgeons, Columbia University, associate professor of neurology, Mount Sinai, author of over 65 published papers in peer-reviewed literature, and a longtime advocate of rebuilding the body without the use of vaccines and how to naturally stimulate the immune system. Now, I'm going to invite the audience to share their questions, thoughts, and comments. You've just seen Autism Made in the USA. Sorry for the two glitches. That's something that we couldn't help. But the moment that it was knocked down a couple times, we got it back up, and I said I would give free copies of the film to anyone who wants it by calling our office tomorrow. Now, here are some questions, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and then I want you to give us a real in-depth answer on this. Right now, in Indiana, they are putting on all the students' identification cards a sticker to show that you have been vaccinated, and they're making it mandatory. You're not even allowed to get on certain school buses without this. This is one example of how they go about it. They get something going in one state until it's completely mandatory or compulsory, then they start broadening it out from there. Behind this is the pharmaceutical industry. They have front groups. They have scientists for hire. They have think tanks on their side. They have news media that will never question them. And, of course, they have all the top agency people in Washington, CDC and FDA and their advisors. Against all that, there are only a handful of individuals, yourself certainly being one of the leading spokespersons, to say, hold on a second, if good medicine and public health is supposed to be based upon good science, let's just examine the science. So when you've looked at the science, you've told us you cannot find any science that shows that a given vaccine can be both safe and effective for a given person. In fact, large outbreaks recently of the measles and whooping cough occurred in groups that were fully vaccinated. Also, they've tried to say, well, this is the best way of building immunity. And yet, when people who study the immunological effects of vaccines, it can't be shown that an antibody will be protective. The fact that you've stimulated antibodies doesn't mean those antibodies are going to defend you against a given pathogen. And even those that might be able to defend you, you don't know at what level they would have to be given, since all vaccines are given to the same in the same way, to the same in the same amount. So if you weighed 20 pounds or 400 pounds, you get the same vaccine. That's insane. There's no science behind that. And yet in the studies of vaccines research, when they're doing a study, they have a very small group of people, for example, in the pregnancy vaccine, and they excluded any woman who developed a high fever of 102 during the first 72 hours after being vaccinated. You were taken out of the study. If you had had chemotherapy, out of the study. Any form of heart medication or heart disease, out of the study. Any selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or any case of mental illness, out of the study. Anyone who was an alcoholic, out of the study. Now, when you exclude all the people who were not allowed in the study, you've reduced your population base by about 70%. And yet those same 70% who would not be allowed in a study on safety of efficacy of vaccines are then turned around and given the vaccine when it's brought out, which shows to me a gross hypocrisy and a contradiction. That said, every single governmental agency and all the scientists associated with it immediately come in lockstep to say that everything is safe and effective without giving an inch that the vaccines could be dangerous. Every single person says the same thing, as if they're all talking from the same page of talking points. Vaccines are safe and effective. Not to take them is to put the general population of the herd at risk. And yet, we can drive a stake through the heart of that by showing that from the very first major vaccine advocate, Jenner, his own son died. And the boy, Phelps, died. And so many of the people that he treated died. And he never was able to prove that the cowpox vaccine would protect you from the smallpox. And doctors at the time tried to ridicule him, but he had a very wealthy and powerful supporter, and that's how he was established. I'd like for you to take us on a history lesson through the history of vaccine and show that there is a legitimate challenge to those public health advocates who say the reason we don't have major infectious epidemics are because of the vaccines from smallpox and cholera. We would have had had these and killed a lot of people if we didn't have them. And I know that you know there's a different reason why we haven't had the end of these major infectious diseases. Give us this history lesson now, please.
Well, the history of mandatory vaccination actually started in the UK in 1863 or 1865 when the first mandatory vaccination law was passed. And at that time, there were 11 different licensing bodies for a physician to be able to get a medical license to practice. You could buy it, you could go to university, you could be an apprentice, you could inherit it. There were 11 different ways, and there was no standardized education the way that there is now. So when vaccination first became prevalent in that time and became mandatory in about 1867, and keeping in mind that the only vaccine at that time was the smallpox vaccine, there was skyrocketing amounts of disease that came from that filthy vaccine. There was syphilis that was spread all around the world by the missionaries that touted vaccination of all the heathens. There were skyrocketing outbreaks of smallpox all across the UK when they made it mandatory. And at the same time, which I think is very interesting, is that the anti-vaccine movement was actually given birth at the same time. And they called it, instead of the anti-vaccination movement, was actually called My Baby's Battle, where moms used to hide their children when the vaccinators used to come from door to door, and they used to cut holes in the walls of the apartment and set dressers in front of them. And when the vaccinators would come to the door, they would shuttle their children into the next apartment or the next little household to keep them away from the vaccinators. And these were actually started, that whole movement was started by mothers who had lost their children, who had died from the smallpox vaccine, or it had horrible gangrene that happened to their arms from the vaccine. And so the resistance to mandatory vaccination, the resistance to these filthy things being injected into our body under some illusion that somehow it's supposed to keep us quote-unquote healthy, started with the very first vaccination, which was smallpox. And most of the illnesses have come and gone, you know, high incidence rates of pertussis and measles and mumps and rubella and chickenpox and polio for sure, that most of those diseases had were on their way out or were way on their way down before the vaccine was even instituted. And that was so that's why when the conversation first starts with people who are unfamiliar with the vaccine controversy, I guess you could say, it always starts from the place of what about smallpox and what about polio. Well, with smallpox, it's estimated that less than 10% of the global population was actually ever vaccinated. And with polio, the peak of the incidence of the polio epidemic in this country was on its way out before the Salk vaccine was ever implemented. And there were other countries around the world that polio went away as hygiene improved, and they never had mandatory mass vaccination at the time of the 1950s. And then pertussis was well on its way out before they started using the pertussis vaccine and the hepatitis B vaccine, which is nonsensical and should have never been started in this country to begin with, and the chickenpox vaccine that was only started purely for parent convenience, because now we have both parents that are working for a living to provide the same level of family income and lifestyle that could be provided solely by the man or one working parent back in the 1950s. We have both parents working now. And so the chickenpox vaccine was developed for convenience so that moms didn't have to miss a week of work in order to stay home with their ill child. And so all of these vaccines have been developed under just very strange circumstances. And sadly enough, there's another at least 20 vaccines that are coming down the pipeline, and most of them are being targeted towards adolescents and more to the adult population. I got an email the other day from the Third World Vaccination Congress that's going to be held next April in China. And I'm not exactly sure why I was on this list, but I got on the list, and It's actually quite disheartening, Gary, to see the hundreds of vaccines that are being planned and in for development, not only for humans, but also for animals and for just about every type of microbe, every type of disease, every type of genetic DNA manipulation. We are absolutely, there's these mad scientists sitting out there somewhere creating every possible type of disruption to the human genome in the name of health. And I find it quite frightening.
All right. I appreciate that overview. And also let us not forget that the primary reason that we ended certain diseases, starting in Europe, is because they began to bring in individuals who realized they had too many people in an urban area and they didn't have the services. There was no running water. Every single toilet was outside. As a result, people would defecate in the morning in a bucket and throw it out into the street. If a person died, you wrap them in a sheet and put it out on the street, and people would come along and take them and bury them. They frequently would use mass burial. They would take their water out of the Thames, which was contaminated, and they didn't have fresh fruits and vegetables because transportation from the country into the city was a long process, and without refrigeration, by the time you got something in there, it was frequently rotten unless it was nearby. Only when they improved the roads, and hence the transportation from the country to the city, they put fresh water and into the city where people could actually have access to clean water, and they started making all burials into the countryside in graveyards, and no longer into the city or dumping them in the river. And then the whole aspect of hygiene, even in the United States, hygiene was the single improving it, and also improving the hygiene and working conditions was the single greatest reason, with good nutrition, that we began to see a turnaround in some of these diseases. Yet that's given no credit. Now, the next issue, and Doctor, I would like for you to also give an answer to this.
Well, you know, let's go to Haiti right now, where hundreds of people have died from cholera, literally, because they don't have clean water. Plain and simple, you know, and you're going to see what's going to happen. They're going to recommend the cholera vaccine as opposed to, because that's easier to deal with. It's an illusionary type of thing, rather than hygiene, nutrition, clean water. Those are hard things to do. I mean, that requires, there's no money in it, in a sense. I mean, I think that's really the ultimate. You know, Gary, as an attorney, I wish Merck would have called me because I would have done a very good job for them. If you remember on Vioxx, they took Vioxx off the market voluntarily. The problem we have today is Celebrex is just as dangerous, except they never voluntarily took it off the market. And they were, the profits there, why would the stock go up for Merck? They were generating somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 million a month of profit, you know, from just the one drug, Vioxx. And keeping it on the market for a year longer, 2 years longer, would have paid more than enough money for the lawsuits, you know. But, you know, I think the ultimate problem that we face, or, you know, I want to just mention one thing before we run out of time here tonight, because, you know, you've influenced, Gary, you've influenced thousands and thousands of people to understand issues. And Dr. Sherry, you've also influenced thousands of people. There are alternatives. You don't have to get vaccinated. Your children don't have to get vaccinated. You know, Dr. Sherry outlines it well in her book. I outlined it well in my Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate. Dr. Sherry and I are doing webinars, which we've had Dr. Gary on, and we're going to continue having that. You know, so there are alternatives for the millions of people now who decide they don't want to vaccinate their children. And what happened in Indiana is disgraceful. You know, we needed some protest there. You know, we needed some people to put yellow armbands on maybe when they got on the bus, you know, to...
Well, remember, that's where Gardasil got its first expose, is out in Indiana by a very, very, very courageous journalist out there. Now we have over 44 young girls who have died from Gardasil. Over 2,800 have been injured, and yet the mainstream media refuses to cover the story. Now, here's another issue, and then we're going to open it up to calls. In about 5 minutes from now, we're going to take the remainder of our time for phone calls, questions, comments you would like to ask. We're having people all over the United States, North America, and Canada listen in now. 888 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Right now, we are gearing up for another flu season. The FDA and the CDC and the World Health Organization are once again saying that the H1N1 virus that they're now incorporating with the flu virus, if there are three different strains in one vaccine, and they're still claiming 36,000 people die each year of the flu. I would like for you to address that, Dr. Timpany, because you and I both know that the CDC's own statistics show that that's a lie. And also show why you would tell people not to use the H1N1 vaccine or the flu vaccine. All right?
Well, what's interesting is that the CDC says that when you get a flu shot, that in order for it to work and keep you from getting sick, and to use their language, in order for it to be effective, it means that the three viruses that are have been attenuated or have been inactivated that are in the flu shot need to match the virus that's out there in circulation that could be causing you to get sick. What's really interesting is that I've plowed through all of their data, and I've gone through all kinds of spreadsheets year after year after year. And what you find out is that there, besides influenza, that there are several hundred, there's 168 other conditions, and which include other types of viruses, like respiratory syncytial virus, parainfluenza viruses, metaviruses, adenoviruses. There's all kinds of other viruses that can cause influenza-like illness. It gives you the exact same syndromes of fever and chills and body aches and feeling sick as the flu. And we label it the flu, even though truthfully, the only real influenza is caused by an influenza virus. So in order for the flu shot to work, if it works at all, it has to match whatever the bugs are, the influenza virus is out in the circulation. So you get a flu shot, it's got three viruses in it, and so it's going to protect you how much of the time, since there are all these other types of viruses and conditions that can cause you to be sick. Well, as it turns out, that over the last 11 years, using CDC data of testing, which means you get sick, you feel like you got the flu, you go to a test center, they do a nasal swab and a throat swab, they send it to the CDC, and they analyze it for what type of microbe is causing you to get sick. And over the last 11 years, from 1997 up through and including 2008, which is their most recent published data, only 14% of the time were you sick because of an influenza virus, which means that at best, if flu shots work at all, which I'll say in just a moment that I don't believe that they do, and there's plenty of data that says that they don't, that at best it's going to create an antibody that's going to match with 14% of the viruses out there in circulation. So 86% of the time you can still get sick after you've had a flu shot. And then the Cochrane Collaboration has done a silo analysis. They are a think tank organization that does analysis of all published data, and they take a particular topic, and they will review every single published study on that topic that has ever been published. So in 2006, and again in 2008, they did a silo review of flu shots, and they divided all of the data into three categories: pediatrics, middle-aged adults like healthcare workers, and senior citizens, those over the age of 65. And after reviewing all of the literature, their conclusion was in all three age groups, children, middle-aged adults, and senior citizens, that flu shots were no more effective in keeping you from getting sick than taking a sugar pill, no more effective than placebo. And we all know there are many, many other ways that you can keep yourself healthy during the winter than from getting to keep you healthy during the winter. So flu shots are not like B12 shots. And I get discouraged sometimes, Gary, when I hear people say things like, well, I'm going to get my flu shot because it was free. Well, it's kind of like, you know, I can hit you on the side of the head with a ball bat. That was free, too. Is that good for you just because it was free? And so people think of flu shots because they're free. It must be okay. They think of going and getting a flu shot like it's good for them, like getting a vitamin B12 shot. It is not good for you. And you can take on all of the risks of serious side effects of getting the shot. It doesn't keep you from getting sick, and it doesn't match the circulating viruses out there. So you can get the flu shot, and you can still get sick anyways.
I appreciate that answer. Joining me in studio in New York City is Dr. Howard Robbins. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Gary.
tell us why you would not get a flu vaccine.
Well, one of the biggest problems with the flu vaccine is they only use three, and I've heard as many as eight different viruses that they're hoping will be the ones that you'll come in contact with. The real issue is that these viruses mutate, and they mutate on a daily basis based on the environment they're in, temperature changes and whatnot. By the time a virus, you get the flu virus hitting you, it's completely different from what you've been vaccinated against. The second thing is why people aren't getting sick from those viruses, because they may have a strong enough immune system to fight them off in the first place. Another problem with the flu virus is you can get the flu from the vaccination. I think as much as 5% of the people that get the flu vaccination will get the flu from the vaccination itself, where they might have avoided it otherwise. And then the worst part of it all is, and I believe this is a statistic from the CDC, up to 5% of the people that get flu vaccinations can have anaphylactic reactions to the vaccination and will die from the vaccination. So now you're putting your life at risk, whereas before you might just get sick and recover.
Okay, Dr. Martin Feldman. Marty, two issues for you. One, as a neurologist and spending your life in academia and in practice, you've had a chance also, as being the supervisor of a lot of these studies, to see the impact of diet and lifestyle modification and supplements and chelation and whatnot on autistic children. You've seen in your office the children who are now normal, who were into full spectrum autism, yet the mainstream media has not spoken with a single one of these. 2 years ago, you and I spoke at the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine Chicago, presenting information. Last year, I took a child, Jonathan Ortega, whose mother and father are both New York City police officers, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, and I had to present a scientific paper. I chose not to present the scientific paper. At the last moment, I said to about 4,000 scientists assembled in Washington at this conference, where I was one of the keynotes, based upon some clinical studies you and I had done, I said, I would like to introduce you to three people. The first person I introduced was a woman in her 60s. She came out. Her name is Marie McGovern. And Marie talked for a few moments, not long, about her life and her work, instructor at NYU, professor at NYU, and also a person who has a history in the history of art and she was the curator for Lloyd's of London, etc. And people didn't know why she was saying all this. And very articulately, and I said, Marie McGovern is the only person I'm aware of, unless someone in this room knows someone, who had full end-stage Alzheimer's, was on her way in a car to Assisted Living Center for Alzheimer's Patients in Indiana, and where her home state, and someone on the George Washington Bridge driving her heard I was going to do a one-year health support group for people who had any form of brain abnormalities, multiple sclerosis, ALS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, came back, entered her, and I said that we filmed everyone on their first entry point. And this is a woman who couldn't hold her head up, was drooling, could not give us any background on herself because she didn't remember, couldn't take care of herself, couldn't walk outside her house because she couldn't remember that she lived inside, couldn't buy something because she wouldn't know that she needed money and wouldn't know what to do with what she bought, completely incapable of taking any responsibility for herself, just like Charlton Heston, just like Ronald Reagan at the end. Today, she's completely normal. I said, now, the very protocol that I used on her is the same protocol I use on the fellow you just heard from, Jonathan Ortega, who came out and showed he was Outstanding Student of the Week for 12 straight weeks. He's at Montessori. He is now playing the guitar and piano. He was not able to speak for 12 years. He was on four different antipsychotic medications. He was becoming violent. His parents took him to the psychiatrist and said, either we put your son on a fifth antipsychotic medication or you have to put him in an institution, where a lot of these kids, when they get certain size and certain age, are put, and they're warehoused there. It's a freaky, scary place. And she went home. She was sitting at her kitchen table. She was crying. And then on the radio, she heard me talking about to help with stroke, there's certain nutrients. She started writing it down because seizures, I should say, and her son had had seizures. She tried that. The seizure stopped. She brought her in. You and I put him on a protocol. Today is completely, 100% normal. And I said, so here you have a woman who had reversed end-stage Alzheimer's, a young man who reversed very advanced autism spectrum disorder. They are both normal. You would never be able to diagnose anything from their blood chemistry or their behavior, and yet you won't hear a word about this anywhere in medicine or the media. If a pharmaceutical company created a drug that was able to do what we have done, it would be on the headlines of every paper. It would be the talk of the scientific world. Why is it that when something is done naturally and non-toxic, that it is given no credit, and yet you are a group of 4,000 scientists? What responsibility do you have to look into how this was done, review the protocols, because these are not alone. We have over 500 individuals nationwide who have improved or reversed autism to where they are able to live normal lives, and no one is asking their doctors, Dan doctors and others, how they're doing it. I said, this is the shame of American medicine, this is the betrayal of American science, and this is the indifference and complicity of American media to participate in this. So I said, if you're interested in the truth and you're willing to participate in real science, come outside and speak with them. About 500 scientists left their chairs and ran right out of that room and spoke with these people. Now, what they're doing about it, I don't know. But I do know that it's important that the world understands what is happening. Your thoughts, please.
I have a very high academic position at the Mount Sinai Medical School here in New York City. I'm assistant clinical professor of neurology in the Department of Neurology. I've written more than 65 peer-reviewed papers on neurological research in various topics, neurophysiology, and many others. And it is a disgrace. My colleagues in the profession of neurology in New York City, at least, at the highest levels, will not listen to me. I'm now considered an alternative neurologist, and I have very, very good academic record, but they have a kind of a stuck, they're stuck in their thinking. They don't go out of the box, and in my view, the more specialized I find the doctors, the more difficult it is to show them a new idea. I can do better with a general pediatrician than I can with a pediatric neurologist in terms of talking about the whole issue of what causes autism in terms of the vaccinations. The mothers and fathers know what happened, and the pediatricians may a little bit listen, but the pediatric neurologists tend to be very, very stuck in their dogmatic. So I keep very, very perfect records because we have to show this to the whole world, and it is an uphill fight. One other aspect of this is this. In New York State, I find that we have various legal remedies whereby we can refuse vaccinations, and therefore I work with a lawyer almost daily to help mothers and fathers to have prevention of these vaccinations. And this is part of the whole process where I think the medical doctors or certain persons like yourself have to help legally to avoid the vaccination. And it can be done in this state. I don't know about other states. As we go forward, the more we go into the public directly and less into the medical profession directly, I think the better we're going to do. And programs like this, which go directly to the public, are, I think, more important and can do more for the whole process that we have to contain.
Look at how many individuals you've been able to help rebuild their immune systems after they've been damaged by multifactorial conditions. And yet, the physicians in complementary medicine know how to do that. Each and every one has their own system, frequently incorporating what others have shared. Dr. Tenpenny has shared many of her ideas. Others are picking up on those. You have a community that's talking, the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Physicians. We've had how many articles in there, Marty?
At least 30. Yeah. Over the years.
Over the years, based upon original clinical studies. And so you have probably 5,000 to 10,000 physicians who are in the know, but there are a million doctors in America. Isn't it amazing that under 0.01% are in the know, and the rest intend to stay ignorant of the issue? Some final thoughts, if people would like to call in now, the forum is yours. Call us and speak with our panel. We have some four distinguished people here involved in helping people who have been vaccinated or understand the issues of vaccines. 888 888-874-4888. We have 5 minutes to go. 888-874-4888. Meyer, give us your idea of why you're concerned about the ingredients in vaccines.
Well, you know, if you just take a look at the ingredients, like you started saying in the beginning, mercury, aluminum, the formaldehyde, all the different toxins and vaccines, no one would willingly inject this into themselves. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, it just makes no sense, you know. And anyone who wants to read a little bit more on this, just go back and look at the transcripts from the Simpsonwood hearings. This is more frightening than any of the WikiLeaks, WikiLinks, or Wiki, whatever it is, you know.
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks, you know. I mean, that makes this look like, you know, child's play. You know, just go to Google and put in Simpsonwood, and you will read what some of the top scientists in the world, and they got together, and they knew the dangers of mercury and how they were going to cover it up, you know. Mercury is the most toxic substance we know. You're not allowed to eat the fish because it has mercury in it. You're not allowed to play with thermometers. You're not allowed to play with mercury, but we're allowed to inject it into our children. It makes absolutely no sense. You know, and I have no thought, but I want to just bring my lawyer skills here. 48 states in this country allow for a religious exemption to vaccines, and it's a very, very liberal interpretation what that is. The only two states Sherry, help me, I can't remember now, all of a sudden.
West Virginia and Mississippi.
Thank you. See, Sherry knows all the answers. Those are the only two states that don't allow for a religious a waiver exactly. for vaccines. And the reason why this is so important, because this is constitutionally protected by the First Amendment. And New York actually led the way with the Wexler decision about 20 years ago, saying that you didn't have to be a Christian scientist, you didn't have to be a Jehovah's Witness. You could have a personal, specific religious belief. You know, and I think this is real important, because the best way not to get damaged by vaccines, the best way is not to take them in the first place. And I think that's really the bottom line. If we get away from this paradigm that vaccines are safe and effective and help, and realize that they don't help, you know, we've in medicine, we have lost the ultimate oath that we took, the Hippocratic oath, above all, do no harm. I think we've forgotten that. In fact, many of the medical schools don't even have you take the oath after you finish medical school. You know, and I think that's the problem. We've just literally gotten away from it. Look into it. Read the material. Don't find another doctor. There are starting to a growing number of doctors. Find a Dan doctor. That's Defeat Autism Now. Take your healthy child to a Dan doctor. Don't go to a pediatrician. Go to pediatricians who don't believe in vaccines. There are a growing number of them.
Oh, there's a lot of doctors who are gone way beyond the Dan doctors at this point.
I use it as an example, right?
Okay, but that, from my point of view, the Dan doctors are behind the curve, not ahead of it.
I agree with Wade, but they're ahead of the curve as far as the typical pediatrician.
I agree.
I'm talking about taking your healthy child to them.
I fully agree with you. Dr. Tim Penny, your final comments on this, and one little extra comment I would like for you to address, and that is, why do you believe that the average physician is not as educated as you on the subject of the dangers of vaccines?
Well, I'll start from that place, Gary. I mean, for one thing, I didn't roll over in bed one morning and just wake up and know all this stuff. I've spent committed, dedicated 10 years of my life, and I know it's more than 10,000 hours of time. I spend 2 to 4 hours every single waking day on vaccine information and keeping up on all the different elements of it. Physicians aren't willing to make that time commitment to anything, not even their own specialty, in keeping up with the stuff that they need to do. So taking on something else, they're just not interested. But above and beyond that, I think it's because if they start to question the vaccination paradigm, if they start to question what they believe is the mother of all wonderful things about what healthcare and medicine is all about, if they start to question vaccination, then they are going to have to look the devil in the eye and question all of it. They're going to have to question the drug-based pharmaceutical paradigm. They're going to have to know that they're not really doing anything, in most of them, in the big picture of helping anybody. They're just passing out pills and taking their paycheck and going home. And they would have to go about changing their practice of medicine in order to change their paradigm to get into functional medicine, integrative medicine, holistic things, and being able to help people get well instead of just using suppressive conventional paradigms in medicines. And I don't think that most of them are willing to do that. I think it's frightening. I think it's economically scary. And it's just easier to just be kind of a zombie automaton and just walk goose step to what you're told. And if you behave and you do what you're told, you'll get your paycheck and you can go home.
I don't think
that there's a big curiosity, and I think that it's just the sad state of the healthcare system that we have today. And fortunately, there are people out there like all of the people you've got on this call tonight and many, many more that are doing functional medicine, integrative medicine. They're joining organizations. They're realizing that it's time for a change. And one of the biggest changes we can have, I've always said that stopping this vaccination paradigm will never be a top-down change. It will have to become a grassroots bottom-up change where parents just say no, and they learn that their children can function just fine, and there's so many other things that they can do, and they know in their heart, and they stand by it, that health absolutely cannot come through a needle, and you take on all those risks of the vaccine, and you can get the illness anyways. And so more and more people are getting educated through Mayor, through you and I doing the webinars, through your books and my books, and Gary, your marvelous movies that you've done. And people are waking up, and they'll just have to say no. And if sooner or later you stop buying widgets, the widget factory goes out of business. Well, if sooner or later we stop buying vaccines, then the vaccine industry will have to go out of business.
Give us your website, please.
The website, there's two websites now. We're launching a new website actually this week. We're moving into a new office in Cleveland. The new website will be Tenpenny, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y, I, M like Mary, C like Charlie.com, TenpennyIMC.com. You can still get the vaccine information directly by going to drtenpenny.com, and the flu DVDs and everything are available there. So tenpennyimc.com or drtenpenny.com will get you to our information. And please feel free, all you people who haven't already, to join me on Facebook at facebook.com/vaccineinfo. We've got 19,000 people that on a daily basis are out there discussing these issues.
That's great. Mayor, give us your website, please.
Sure. It's homefirst.com. That's HOMEFIRST.com. And I've taken lots of what you've done, Gary, and what Sherry has done, and put it on our website, and you can also read about our practice.
Thank you. Howard Robbins, give us your website.
Well, you can call me in the office at 212-581-0101, or here on the Progressive Radio Network Sunday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. on the 888-874-4888 number.
Dr. Martin Feldman, Marty, give us your contact information.
Best way would be Precise, P-R-E-C-I-S-E-M-D, PreciseMD at AOL.com. For anyone in New York State, I'd be very happy to help any mother or father working with my lawyer to prevent the vaccination of your child in the New York State. We can help you with that. Very easy process, much easier than you might expect.
I want to thank our panel and also just give you some of the figures of the story of our evening tonight, the whole premiere and everything else in this webinar. On Facebook was read and watched by 1.9 million people. 1.9 million people. I want to thank all of you for sharing an evening with us. We will use this forum again for upcoming programs, including our major feature film. We've been working on it for 4 years. It is now complete. And I'll announce when we're going to be showing Death by Medicine in the very near future. Have a good evening, everyone. Now we will return to our programming on the Progressive Radio Network.
The Gary
Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
New sensation.